This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, the business station. My name is Rich Bradbury. This is Matt Splained. We've got some more weird science for you this week. And why? Because we actually talked about something topical last week, and it's not sitting so well with Matt. Matt, what's the problem?
Well, I wouldn't say it's a problem. You know, it's just that I had a whole sort of collection of fun little stories queued up for last week, and that was shot out of the water by all those emerging stories coming out of Facebook, which seems to be continuing its run of bad PR, seemingly not helped by the attempts of its executives to explain the issues away in media appearances. So I will continue that run of stories briefly just to mention a new feature that Facebook PR head and former British Deputy Prime Minister Nick Clegg announced last weekend on shows like CNN's State of the Union. It's called Take a Break. The function is designed to advise teenage users to do just that, to take a break from using the app. So according to attempts by The Verge to get more details on how that might actually work, it's not in the testing stage yet, but apparently it will be very soon. So it's very hard to say how it's going to work or what the additional parental controls that Nick Clegg also mentioned on CNN are going to be. However, from what has been reported, the idea is that if teens are looking at the same kind of content over and over, and if it's content that, as Clegg stated, may not be conducive to their well-being, then they will be advised to take a break. So I'm assuming that it's going to be linked to some kind of AI operation.
If it's an algorithm-based tool, doesn't that open up more questions about how their recommendation engines work?
Well, if you mean that if the algorithm is smart enough to know that the content might not be conducive to their well-being, then you might ask, why was it served up in their feed in the first place? So, you know, like I said, until we have an idea of what this tool is and how it works, it's going to be very hard to say. But it does seem to be that Facebook has become one of those companies that is so far removed from the people that it's supposed to serve that every fix it offers up actually makes things worse for itself. I'll warn everyone now, I will be doing another one of those shows where I argue that we should be paying for tech services with cold hard cash and not putting up with the kind of treatment and manipulation that we currently experience.
Bold words, Matt.
And an even bolder story. You know, we talk about Star Trek a lot on this show. I use the references because A, I'm old, and B, I lack the imagination to update my culture references. But despite the constant references to the show and its spin-offs, they are, of course, fiction. You know, even I've finally accepted that. None of the actors who bring those shows to life has ever been to space or visited Vulcan or lived on a space station next to a stable wormhole, which is where I hope to retire to. This week, all of that changed. William Shatner, the original Captain Kirk, became the latest guest to make it into space on a Blue Origin flight on Wednesday.
Yeah. Do you see this becoming a trend? You know, iconic actors getting their chance to escape to the stars?
Well, it is something that Blue Origin repeatedly stresses, or they repeatedly stressed during the broadcast I watched yesterday, the opportunity for artists and poets, they're very keen on poets for some reason, to go into space. So presumably with the huge cost of those spots covered or offset by Blue Origin, as was the case with Wally Funk on the first trip and, of course, William Shatner this week. Yeah. It would be amazing to see some of the other space opera stalwarts getting their own invitations because, you know, so many of them are gone already just from my own generation's touch points.
Yeah.
Spock, you know, Leonard Nimoy, Carrie Fisher is gone, James Earl Jones, who, of course, is the voice of Lord Vader. And I'd love to see George Takei get a chance. And of course, for Mark, and for Mark Hamill to finally get a chance to walk the skies. So Shatner became the oldest person to go into space. At 90, he makes Wally Funk. At only 82, seemed like a whippersnapper. But indeed. And it was really moving to watch Shatner talk about his experience afterwards.
Until what's his name interrupted him and said, "Can you just pass me the champagne?" And I'm like,
I wasn't going to mention that. I thought that as well. I thought it was so rude. He cut him off and then sprays champagne all over the place. But then, you know, if you're the world's richest man, I guess you can do whatever you like to James Tiberius Kirk. I watched it all live, but I saw the in-cabin videos of the apogee moment of the flight the following morning. And Shatner was just glued to the window. And he kept saying things like, "Oh, wow, I can't believe this," over and over again. And on the ground, you know, he kept bursting into tears. And he said this amazing thing. I mean, it was amazing for me. So I hope I never recover from this. And, you know, I hope he doesn't.
Yeah. Do you think this cements a position then of those space startups, Blue Origin and SpaceX especially, where they make that transition from being the industry disruptors to becoming the backbone of the space industry?
Well, that may be something we should look at on a show in the future, especially given that some of the other tech and science we're talking about today could also be used for space exploration. And I have to say, there was a small part of me that was hoping that there'd be a minor technical fault on that Blue Origin flight and that William Shatner would go into Captain Kirk mode and, you know, find a way to fix it. But just going back to your question, some of the more traditional and established space operators have been experiencing problems. Boeing has got ongoing technical issues with its Starliner projects, and that looks set to delay its next NASA test flight. NASA has announced that it's looking at opportunities for the Starliner in the first half of 2022. So far, that project has completed one uncrewed test flight, but software issues prevented it from reaching its destination, which of course was the ISS. A second test flight was delayed earlier this year when an issue was detected with the ship's oxidizer isolation valve, and that problem still hasn't been resolved. Now, both Boeing and SpaceX are contracted to NASA to send and repatriate crews to and from the ISS. So it looks like Elon Musk's company is currently in the lead there. It successfully delivered replacement crew members to the ISS in April. And now two astronauts who were to take the Starliner have been assigned to SpaceX instead. So, you know, cars, space, robots, it really does look like Elon is destined to take over the universe.
Okay, let's move away from the idea of a, you know, galactic President Musk, please.
All right, well, this is something else that billionaires hate as much as being trapped on a dying planet. And of course, that's aging. So this is from a recent story reported in New York Times about metabolism and about new breakthrough research into the way those metabolisms or human metabolisms function. So it's been accepted wisdom that as we get older, the metabolism slows down. And it's also been accepted that women have a slower metabolic rate than men, and that rate further slows because it's exacerbated by menopause. Now, as it turns out, if this new research as published in the journal Science proves correct, that a lot of these preconceptions are actually wrong. So before we go into the results themselves, there are other reasons that this is a landmark study. Metabolic research is slow, it's very expensive, and as a result, studies often contain a relatively small number of subjects. This study's lead, Herman Ponser, an evolutionary anthropologist at Duke University, convinced researchers from half a dozen different institutions to pool their work, and as a result, the study has over 80 co-authors and combines research collected from 6,500 participants over a span of more than 40 years.
Are you planning to use this as the basis for your new book on a crisp-based diet?
Would that I could. I know it's going to be a New York Times bestseller. And recently I came across recipes for making mashed potato from potato chips. Unfortunately, I'm not a big fan of mash. Crisps are the dominant form of potato in my life. So no sneaky science denying sleight of hand to make me money. Dr. Ponce's research found that our metabolic rates differ quite widely across four stages of our lives. So those are infancy. They're from 1 to 20 years old, 20 to 60 years old, and of course, beyond 60. You won't be surprised to find out that we burn the most calories when we're infants because you know, we have to get our bodies to catch up with our overly large and empty brains. Between 1 and 20, it seems that the metabolic rate declines around 3% per annum. But what I found surprising was it's actually steady for that middle age period, from that period of 20 years old to 60.
Which means, in your case, it is the crisps and not your metabolism.
That comment is worthy of a lesser man. I've been listening to the Game of Thrones books again this week, so it's turned my language a bit flowery. But yes, it would seem that way. You know, when you play the game of crisps, you win or die. And then when people reach around 60, that metabolic rate slows by around 2/3% a year. But the most interesting fact that once you actually account for body size and muscle mass, there are actually no differences between men and women. And also, there's no detectable effect from menopause, so shattering those age-old beliefs and scientific constants. So one of the most surprising findings was that newborn babies, who you would have expected to have the fastest rate of all, they actually have roughly the same metabolic rate as their mother for the first month, and then it suddenly accelerates. Although from the current research, they're not actually clear as to why that acceleration happens and what triggers it.
Oh, this is really interesting. But what kind of implications then are we likely to see as a result of this study?
Well, obviously this is a starting point. So a lot of people have described this as very kind of, you know, top down, very big thought. So they're going to have to look for a lot of new answers. Apparently, most people add about 2/3 of a kilo in weight a year throughout their adulthood. If the study is correct, we can no longer attribute that to slowing metabolism. So it may change the way we prescribe medicines and doses, because those assumptions about how quickly they're metabolized may be wrong. So it's really profound in a lot of ways. Yeah. A lot of what we thought we knew about diet and nutrition, public health policies, all of this may have to be reevaluated. And once that new research is conclusive, those policies may have to be reformulated. And it also opens up opportunities to look at why some people's metabolic rates are higher or lower than those norms, and how factors like obesity affect it, because often we think that metabolism creates those conditions for obesity, but it could be that obesity is actually having an effect and slowing the metabolism. So it's very profound, and obviously a lot more research needs to be done before we can make those judgments.
But surely the most profound implications will be amongst those, you know, older age groups.
Well, New York Times quotes Dr. Samuel Klein from Washington, D.C. Center for Human Nutrition. He wasn't actually involved in the study. But he says that no matter how healthy someone appears to be, when they hit that limit on or around 60, then those metabolic slowdowns start to kick in. So that's going to have an effect on how well our organs function, for example. So he comments that this may be a reason that we tend to see so many more chronic diseases in older people. It's almost like nature has built in a carousel switch. Now, that's a reference that only old people familiar with the movie Logan's Run are going to get, but a better understanding of those metabolic switches, how and when they kick in, and what effects they have, may give us a better idea how to prevent, slow, and manage those chronic conditions as we age.
Okay, now, when we come back, deep fake voices that can fool humans and machines. You're tuned in to Matt Splained here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Boyish 40-something millionaires. BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, the business station. My name is Rich Bradbury. This is Matt Splained. We're no strangers to deepfakes on this show. The term has come to mean AI-manipulated video and audio that puts words in people's mouths and can put faces on other people's bodies. We had our own deepfake human for much longer, but it's not his intelligence that's artificial.
I'd say thank you for the compliment if I hadn't made you read that intro, literally putting words in people's mouths. But, you know, we've talked about deepfakes in the context of misinformation and political trickery. We've also talked more recently about systems that can manipulate movie footage to make dubbed versions of those films look more realistic by changing the character's head and mouth movements to match the dialogue on the screen. So more and more, we're using our voices to identify ourselves, to pay for goods and services, control our homes, vehicles, and of course, those automated assistants.
In other words, we see an increasing security risk posed by deepfake software and hardware as all of these systems spread.
Yeah, I mean, we reached the point where this kind of software can fool people a few years ago. Back in 2019, a German company was duped into paying out almost $250,000 when scammers used voice synthesizing tools to impersonate the company's CEO and persuade an employee at the company's UK subsidiary to pay out that money. So the hope was that automated systems would do a better job of sniffing out the fakes. So the idea is, you know, one algorithm can recognize another. So researchers at the University of Chicago set out to test how freely available voice synthesizing software actually failed in the real world against some of the market leaders in voice-activated tech. They selected Microsoft Azure, WeChat, and of course, Amazon's Alexa, and tried to use these deepfakes to unlock speaker recognition systems, according to the piece I read in New Scientist. Of the three, Alexa allows users to authorize payment for some goods and services by voice. So you can see that there is a real need for these safeguards. They tested two pieces of software, AutoVC and SV2 TTS, both of which can be downloaded free of charge from GitHub.
Now, isn't there some kind of bar for this kind of scam, though? I mean, you know, we played around last year, I think it was, where we, you know, we created our own deepfake voices using software you can download called Descript. You type in what you want, you already register your voice with it at some point, and it reads it back to you in your voice. But it's not 100% accurate, you know, and they typically require quite a lot of audio to process before they can mimic a voice, you know, and it sound familiar.
Sure. You know, for the most part as well, where is somebody going to get that clean recording of your voice? I mean, you use the example of Descript, and I think we both had to put in at least 30 minutes of script reading to actually get it to do that. So how do you actually get that sufficient quantity and variation to create that fake? There's going to be quite a lot of time and effort required, more than might be justified to try and order some low-value items on your Amazon account. I mean, it makes sense if you want to spoof a company for $250,000. So the Chicago team deliberately chose software that meets that low bar. AutoVC only requires about 5 minutes of speech. SV2 TTS requires I mean, I can't even believe this, just 5 seconds of someone's speech before it can formulate the voice.
Wow.
So you remember the old scam before chip cards where a fake reader might be installed at a till and it would steal your card details. Yeah. So we now have the prospect of something similar, but does it with your voice, you know? And as we tend to use loyalty cards to identify us, scammers may be able to match a transaction to a voice too, simply by recording us at that point of sale saying, you know, I'll have a latte and a macchiato, please.
But only if the deepfake gets past those voice security systems, right?
Yeah. Now, worryingly, it was actually the 5 second software that performed the most strongly in spoofing these systems. So SV2 TTS spoofed the Microsoft Azure systems around 30% of the time. And the researchers noted that that would probably rise to around 60% for persistent attacks if the hackers had control of the majority of key phrases that trigger the system, because, you know, you just repeat it till it worked. For WeChat and Alexa, the SV2 TTS software spoofed the systems around 60% of the time. All of the tests were done in English. And for reasons that the researchers are yet to understand, the spoofing was more accurate when it was a woman's voice and also when it was for non-native English speakers, so people with pronounced accents.
Huh. Were the same tests made with human respondents as well as machines?
Yeah, the researchers tested the voices on around 200 people. Those subjects were fooled around half the time. So that suggests at this point, people actually have an edge over the machines. So the algorithms aren't better at spotting the fakes. Now, this isn't to say, or none of this is to say, that the same software will have the same kind of effectiveness against more secure voice systems like the ones that are used by banks. The point of the research was to highlight how easy it would be for criminals to use these kind of easily available tools and to point out that we are coming into this, you know, increasingly voice-controlled world, and it shows the type of security that any voice recognition system needs to employ to ensure that it isn't going to be fooled.
I've got a sneaky suspicion that we're coming to a killer robot part of the show.
Yeah, we talked about a lot of robots last week, Boston Dynamics and their Atlas machines, of course. Imagine if one of those had your voice or that of a loved one as it hunted you through the streets for your electricity-making heart. I've got to stop daydreaming out loud. A friend shared a post about another canine-like dog robot that was exhibited at a defense show this week. Now, the bot itself wasn't new, but the remote-operated rifle module that it carried on its back was.
Wow.
But that's not what we're going to talk about today. This week, we have a flying, tightrope walking, and skateboarding robot. Its name is Leonardo, and it was created by researchers at Caltech and Boston's Northeastern University. And the team actually took birds as their starting point, in that when we see birds, they move around with a combination of walking and flying. So they looked at this as a potential solution for robots who are trying to cross uneven and rocky terrain. Last week, of course, we talked about Boston Dynamics Spot being tested in mining operations.
As a potential replacement for flying drones.
Well, yeah, you know, because we've tended to look at robots as either or. Either they're flying or they're ground-based. And there are good reasons for that. Flying consumes a lot of energy, so it makes sense for the machines to be as small and light as it's practical to be. Ground-based machines can, of course, be larger and heavier, and that allows them to accommodate the bigger batteries they need for the range to make them useful. That's one of the reasons I have dreams about being chased by robots who want my power-pumping heart. Leonardo, of course, tries to combine both. So he's relatively small at 75 centimeters tall, and his weight is only 2.5 kilos, 2.6 kilos, I think. He's... it, I keep calling him a he, I've got to stop anthropomorphizing robots. Leo stands upright. He walks on regular legs with joints at the knees, hips, and ankles, but mounted on its arms are these drone-like rotors. So like a bird, it can walk along, jump and skip, and of course, leap into the air seamlessly.
Presumably the flying isn't designed for long distances.
No, like I said, I mean, it's more for leaping over obstacles like large rocks or moving from level to level. But the rotors also provide stability and thrust. So that allows Leo to do things like ride a skateboard by providing the rotor thrust to propel it. So he's not doing the old sort of foot drag on the ground like we have to. Incredibly, to balance on a rope line. Now, there's a really strange and what looks to be gravity-defying photo of that. But I imagine that's another advantage of the machine, because Leo can use its rotors to reduce its weight on surfaces that are fragile or easily compromised. Now, I'm not sure what the future actually holds for the bot. According to New Scientist, two of its researchers have already moved on to other projects. One has gone to work with NASA's Jet Propulsion Lab. Another has gone to work on flying cars. So who knows? Leonardo's descendants could be searching distant planets in the future.
Which is something else we've talked about on the show. Exploration will need machines that have the ability to make themselves.
You know, our final story is about exactly that kind of machine. This kind of production is known as 4D printing, because it's one more than 3D, that the original form is 3D printed, but the machine is capable of transforming or changing its own form or properties. So it's not a transformer in the movie sense. It doesn't mean that a rover can become a giant mechazoid at the push of a button. It means that there's a predictable change that occurs to its form when it's exposed to some kind of catalyst, heat, water, electric current, or even a certain unit of time. Mm. Now, this is a very simple prototype created by a team at Tianjin University in China. And it's strange how we use the word simple. It's the form of the robot that's simple rather than its construction or its development or its purpose. The machine is actually a rectangular strip of liquid crystal elastomer, which is 3D printed. When you heat it to more than 160 degrees centigrade, the machine starts to form itself.
This feels like the beginning of a very slippery slope, Matt.
I know it sounds scary, but when you watch the video, it looks a bit more benign, because it's really just coiling itself up into a tube. So New Scientist.
Like a snake.
Not like a snake. No, New Scientist describes it as looking a bit like a piece of spiral pasta. And there's, you know, not much that's more benign than a piece of pasta. Personally, I think it looks more like, sellotape when it's all twisted up and round itself in a long strand.
So
So it rolls in the direction of its spiral, and it can pull small loads, and its shape allows it to actually negotiate small obstacles.
So just to be clear, it's not a robot in the sense that it has batteries and electronics.
Well, this is one of the things that makes it really freaky. It's responding to the heat, activating it. So it will even roll uphill, pulling its load, as long as it's following that heat source. It's autonomous in that it simply goes. Once you start it, it just goes and continues. Mm-hmm. So the researchers note that they will have to come up with some kind of remote control system for later versions so that its movements can be guided. But again, it may be something that can be used in space exploration or sent into hostile environments, because it is so simple, there's not much to go wrong. Plus, it's just sheets of plastic, so you know, you can keep a whole bunch of them handy. Much easier and cheaper than losing a gun-toting robo-dog inside a cave. And of course, the perfect thing to send into space with your favorite sci-fi cast member.
I mean, you keep using that word simple. Yeah, I don't think it means what you think it means, you know. Anyway,
well,
thanks
there's
for that,
not
Matt.
Much that, yeah, there's not much that's simpler than a simple piece of plastic. But
for
it's,
now.
It's, yeah, but it's what that plastic represents that isn't simple.
You can find Matt on Instagram and Twitter at Culture Matt, running along with his electricity heart. You can also head over to culturepop.com for transcripts of these shows and information about Culture Pop and its consulting services. If you miss any part of this show, download it where you normally download it from, or I recommend you listen to it back on the BFM app. That's available in the Apple App Store or on Google. I'm Rich Bradbury for BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.